This is Twit.
And I gotta say, Micah, I'm psyched about your top story. This is super cool stuff.
Like, yes, amazing. Absolutely. I mean, look, we've got, you know, all these new phones being announced, and they have foldable screens in some cases. The latest iPhones have better cameras and processors, and that's fine. But let's talk about the smallest ever human-made flying structure. This is such a cool story, and we are joined today by Professor John Rogers of the Robert R. McCormick School of Engineering and Applied Science at Northwestern. Woo, I tried to say that all in one breath. Welcome to the show, Professor John.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Hi, guys.
Hi. Yes, I know you are very busy as this piece is getting out there, and you probably have call after call. So we will get started here, kicking things off. First, can you go ahead and talk about just this winged microchip on its own, kind of what this is, what has been created by you incredible folks at Northwestern at all, please?
Yeah, sure. So just as a quick background, I'm on the faculty here, and so I run a fairly large interdisciplinary research group. Most of what we do is kind of at the boundaries between engineering and medicine. And so we've been interested in very tiny wireless devices that can integrate with the skin or implant into the body to monitor brain activity, physiological processes, that kind of thing. And we've for a while now sort of appreciated the potential for those same type of technology platforms to be used for environmental monitoring. Monitoring the atmosphere or properties of the groundwater, monitoring, you know, chemical spills during remediation efforts and so on. But the challenge there is in dispersal. For the human body, you can, you know, laminate a device onto the skin or you inject it, you know, into the depth of the body. But for large scale, meaningful monitoring of the environment, you'd like to be able to take those devices and disperse them over wide areas or configure them so that they would remain aloft in the environment, in the atmosphere, for example, to monitor particulate pollution or airborne pathogens, that kind of thing. And so that was kind of the context for the project that we've been able to pursue. And what we'll talk about today is, how do you add flight to very small scale pieces of electronics, sensors, radios, power supply systems, and so on. And so that was the context and what we were hoping to achieve with this research.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the most amazing things there is that you have figured out how to sort of mimic nature, or as the Northwestern article quotes, we think that we beat nature, sort of taking this and iterating on it. One of the things I was kind of struck by was how small this technology is, because, if you could first kind of talk about the inspiration of those, back where I'm from in the Midwest, those nice little whirly gigs that fall from the yeah. sky as those seeds get planted. But I didn't realize that this technology could sort of be on a miniature scale too and still be able to have that same aerodynamic effect. So can you talk about your inspiration here and then maybe a little bit about the physics of this much smaller design?
Yeah, that's a very important point. I mean, what we wanted to do is create flight in structures that could be scaled to very small dimensions, because that's kind of represents the overall dominating trend in the development of electronics technologies, really size miniaturization. As you make things smaller, you can reduce the cost, for example. In this context, we envision in the future, deploying thousands of these devices over large areas, and they could, form a wireless network and so on. And so making them small is important in order to make this whole concept kind of economically viable. But the inspiration, it does derive from biology. I mean, we were thinking about, how would you, aerially disperse these devices? And the first thing you might think about is, how would you create flapping wings, so that the microchips could fly away like a mosquito or a gnat or something like that. And I think maybe that's a longer term aspiration. You can imagine that's very difficult from a technical standpoint. But other, organisms in the biological world do things through passive flight, which can also be really valuable, in particular plants and trees. As you mentioned, maple seeds have a winged type of geometry that induces a rotational flight dynamics that reduces the falling speed and increases thereby the time duration with which the seeds can interact with ambient patterns of airflow, wind, to increase the distance for dispersal from the source, from the tree itself. And you think about cottonwood trees or dandelions. There are all kinds of different sort of flight dynamics principles that have been incorporated directly into these wind dispersed seeds driven by evolutionary forces, right? And so we figured, well, maybe we could adapt and extend and modify those kinds of ideas to disperse our very tiny electronic sensor technologies. And so that's what we've done. A lot of the paper is looking at the fundamental physics of the aerodynamics of these kinds of structures, but not at the size scale of seeds. Maple seeds are pretty big, maybe a couple of inches long, but at much smaller dimensions to take advantage of the size reductions and miniaturization efforts that are happening in consumer electronics gadgetry and integrated circuit chips. And so there are principles in aerodynamics that scale nicely down as you reduce dimensions. But at some point, if you make these structures too small, then that flight dynamics kind of disappears and everything behaves like a sphere, essentially. So we push the sizes down to the millimeter scale, where we can still capture that helicopter rotational flight dynamics, but at size dimensions and with features that are much smaller than you would see in seeds.
Mm-hmm. And so one of the things that I was reading in this, in the article of the, talking about the study was that where you've got sort of seed dispersal, as a factor of making sure that these trees can sort of go out and be in a lot of places here, part of the goal is to keep these in the air for longer so that you can track things like air pollution. What are some of the uses of this technology that maybe, are different from just sort of dispersing something onto the ground in a location?
Yeah. Good question. I mean, there's sort of two envisioned modes of use, one in which the devices are doing the sensing after they land on the ground. So monitoring, heavy metal contamination in groundwater, for example. We have, strategies for doing that, measuring cadmium, mercury, lead, those kinds of species, in the groundwater, other things as well, pH and so on. The other set of applications sort of refer to your point, which is, measuring airborne species, chemicals, biological pathogens, particulate pollution, and so on. And if that's your goal, you really are interested in designing flying structures that remain aloft, in the air as long as possible. So seeds, I think, are doing that for purposes of lateral dispersal, sort of maximizing the distance over which they travel before they land on the ground. Our motivation is a little bit different. It's like, keep these things in the air so that they can engage with these airborne, sensing targets for as long as possible. And so those are the two aspects. In some ways they're synergistic. There's some sort of common elements in how you do the aerodynamic design, but the ways that you're doing the sensing and the goals are a little bit different.
So, the new iPhone just was announced. It's coming out tomorrow. And one of the things that Apple showed off on stage was that they've sort of miniaturized some of the internal components to make the battery bigger so that it has all day battery life. I look at this thing. It's already as small as a carpenter ant's head, and the technology packed into it is even smaller than that. How does this thing have any power at all? What are we working with here to make this thing work?
Yeah, power supply is a real challenge, obviously. So there are a couple of different, fully formed devices that we reported in this paper. And just to take a step back, this is the first time these concepts have been introduced. And so we're at the very early stages of developing, a suite of capabilities, in this class of technology. But we demonstrated two things. One is a class of device that doesn't require any power at all. It's not electronic. It's providing a sensing function based on a color change associated with a particular chemical reagent that responds through a color change to a species of interest in the environment. And so we demonstrated pH and heavy metal sensing using those kind of color change principles. And in that type of device, you do wireless readout with high resolution digital imagery that can be captured with a drone, for example. So that's one way to just sidestep the issue of power supply completely. All the wireless capability and the power is embodied in the reader unit, essentially, mm-hmm. you know, high resolution digital camera. The other, you know, platform that we demonstrated is fully electronic and digital in its operation. And we built it to operate based on a combination of power sources. One is solar. So it's powered by sunlight that's striking the device. And the other, which supports wireless data communication, is that we harvest wirelessly transmitted power from an external reader unit. So it's similar to the kind of NFC wireless payment schemes that are built into phones these days, but capable of operating over a much longer distance.
Excellent. All right. One final question for you that is addressed in the article. I think people look and they see, oh, look at that little ladybug. And there's this tiny little microchip next to it and a carpenter ant. And then they start to go, oh, but there's a little microchip laying on the ground next to a ladybug and a carpenter ant. Let's talk about e-waste. What are some of the implications here? And what has your team sort of considered in this dispersal unit and all of the involved issues?
Yeah. Super important issue and a consideration that has to be, you know, prioritized in the development of any kind of technology like this. And I would say that if we didn't think we had an answer to that question, we probably wouldn't have even worked in this direction, because I think the potential for, you know, massive, you know, adverse effects associated with electronic waste in this kind of platform would be significant. So there we were able to tap into a set of electronic materials that we've developed for temporary implants. So they're sort of like resorbable sutures in a sense that they dissolve away when exposed to biofluid slowly over time, but they have the capability for supporting all kinds of electronic functionality, you know, wireless communication, wireless power harvesting, digital sensing, and so on. And we can exploit those same collections of materials and fabrication techniques and device designs in these, environmentally, distributed sensors. And so we've demonstrated that as well, devices that just degrade into the environment to benign end products. So they just naturally disappear, and you can engineer them to satisfy particular operating lifetime requirements. So maybe they operate for a couple of months and then they completely degrade and disappear harmlessly into the environment over the subsequent several months. So this is very much a viable solution and an answer to that very important question about electronic waste.
Awesome. Well, Professor John Rogers, I want to thank you so much for taking the time today to talk to us. I wish you the best and the remaining calls you have as you have reached a feat of human mechanical and biological understanding. It's incredible. Of course, folks can head over to the link we'll include in the show notes to learn more about this. And this study also got the cover on September 23rd's issue of Nature, which is awesome. Where should folks go if they want to continue to follow your work?
They can go to my research group website. It's hosted at northwestern.edu. So if you just Google it, it'll come right up.
Awesome. Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.